Ready? Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board of Directors meeting, October 14th. Can I get a roll call, please, Celia?
Director Angelo?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Thank you. Karen, can I ask you to do us in a flag salute tonight?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. All right. Does anybody have anything they'd like to change to the agenda or add to the agenda at this time?
No.
Nope.
Mr. Ogren, do you have anything you want to add to the agenda or change in the agenda? Okay. I'll entertain a motion to accept the agenda.
I'll move to approve as presented.
Okay.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstaining? Passes. 5-0, Celia. At this time, we're going to take public comment for items that are not on the agenda. Sometimes we're able to take things that are outside of the Oceano Services District purview. So at this time tonight, if people want to keep their comments short, we'll certainly entertain comments that really are outside of our jurisdictions. As many people know, there's multiple tiers to the government, and so we're just one tier. Although we would like to control all aspects, we can't. But we will open our mic for community concerns. So with that note, Mr. Joe Shecker, how are you tonight?
Shecker.
Okay.
I wasn't sure. Well, I am Joe Shecker. I live at 577 Security Court in Oceano. I wasn't sure if this is the night or other nights where you have a sheriff give their report, or is that the sanitation district meetings? Or you don't do that anymore?
No. We do have a sheriff come in. We're having a town hall meeting this month on the 27th, and I actually have a flyer. The break, I'll give it to you. So I didn't expect there to be a representative here tonight.
Oh, okay. Could I just give a quick summary? And I have copies, and I just want to follow up. And the reason I'm really here tonight is I just saw some information about the union information going to mm-hmm. be distributed or talked about tonight. I was just curious that, and I thought I'd come and also talk about this a little bit.
Okay, the union's on the agenda, so when that comes up, we'll definitely take your comments strictly on that. And so for other items that aren't on the agenda, you can use the time now for that.
I have nothing to say about the union. I just want to gain information.
Okay.
If I can just read this, I think I can do better in the interest
sure.
of time.
Okay.
I've got it prepared, and I'll give you all copies. This is in regards to the homeless in the woods. I'd like to make a few comments about the homeless living in the woods in our neighborhood. I'm sure you're aware of this is addressed to the sheriff. I'm sure you're aware of the homeless population now being cleared from adjacent to the Grover train station, and also aware of the homeless in the woods adjacent to the sanitation plant. The homeless and their associated activities are infiltrating our neighborhood now on a regular basis. They have carved out portions of the woods. They have pitched large tents and canvases. They've built fire pits. Their areas and the paths are now lined with trash. Nights and days don't go by without screams, shouting, and arguing coming from the woods or the people coming and going from the woods. Many are swaying and mumbling obscenities as they walk through the neighborhood. One in particular always has a bat or iron pipe swinging at things as he comes and goes. In addition to the homeless, we see people drive up to the bridge, go into the woods for a few minutes or longer, come out and drive away. I'll leave it up to you to fill in the blanks of what's going on. Drugs and prostitution activity are likely candidates. What once allowed for a beautiful walk through our neighborhood and through the woods to the beach, our only access, is quickly going away. Tourists, bird watchers, and our friends coming to the neighborhood are affected. We are empathetic to some of the homeless, but when does empathy trump our safety and the safety of our friends and visitors? We ask you to be proactive in resolving the situation. Patrolling the area on a monthly basis is a suggestion. We ask you to be proactive in coordinating with the sanitation plant and state parks if necessary in resolving this situation. Finally, as you also know, the homeless have infiltrated the alley between McCarthy and Pier Avenues. Shouting, arguing, and drunkenness are also occurring on a regular basis. We thank you, this is to the sheriff, for all the work you are doing for us. Thank you. And if anybody wants copies.
Joan. And you, yeah, we definitely want copies.
And I'd like suggestions on how far for me to pursue this. I don't want to hear, well, I should get a committee together. That's what all these committees are for that are already here in place.
Well, I think on the 27th, you're going to meet people with like minds on this topic.
Okay.
Because I think that there's a lot of like people who realize that something has to be done.
Okay.
You know, and we probably shouldn't focus on which direction it comes from, but how are we going to, what we're going to do.
Good. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Joe. Is there anybody else who'd like to do public comment for items that are not on the agenda tonight? Okay.
Madam President?
Yes.
Just in following up on your comment, to reiterate for the public, so it's Tuesday, October 27th at the Oceano Depot at 6 p.m. That the sheriff is going to have his town hall meeting. And we have flyers here, and we'll make sure to post it on our web as well if we haven't already.
Right. And Joe, I have one here for you when you get a chance. So, yeah, I think that's a very good and important town hall meeting for all of us, in fact. Okay. Special presentations. I know that there was a gentleman who was going to come and talk to us about the replacement of Air Park Drive Bridge and the other road work in Oceano.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening. Members
of the board. Of directors. My name is Don Spagnolo, and I'm the Transportation Programs Manager for the County of San Luis Public Works Department. I'd also like to introduce Kit Immel. Kit is the bridge design engineer, and he's going to help me present some information this evening to you regarding the replacement of the Air Park Bridge. So just to start out, just to kind of give you a feel for, I'm sure you've all been out there, but this is the bridge that we're looking at replacing. This picture is interesting because we wanted to show the relationship of the bridge to the utilities that are attached to it, which is going to be most important to the board as we go forward and we need to replace those things. As you can see, the facilities and pipes are quite rusted, they're quite old, and they will definitely need to be replaced. Here's another picture of the existing pipelines, sewer and water lines that hang off the edge of the bridge. These pipes, of course, will be replaced, but they won't be replaced in the same manner. The new bridge will have specific spots for utility lines underneath the bridge where they'll be hidden from view. So I'm sure you're all aware of where this location is, but it's on Air Park Drive, and this is the location that we're talking about right here. This is a bridge that was built in 1940. It's about 80 feet long and about 20 feet wide. It's made of wood entirely. The under support superstructure, the beams, the supporting piles, they're all made of wood, and I'll show you that in the next picture. We have these bridges. There's an inspection periodically on bridges of this size, for instance, 20 feet and longer. Caltrans does that inspection for us, and they gave us a rating called a sufficiency rating. And you've probably heard about this. There's been some articles in the paper about bridges lately. And course, it goes from 0 to 100, and the sufficiency rating of this particular bridge is about 21. So it is far below the 100 or 50 mark that we associate with replacing bridges, and so it definitely needs to be replaced. So this evening, our purpose in being here is to talk about the bridge replacement. The construction is expected to be done in about 2017. And the utility relocation and notification process, we want to kind of give you a feel for that, and Kit's going to talk a little bit about that. We wanted to talk a little bit about roles and who's going to do what. The county is going to be involved in doing the replacement and creating the plans and specs, working with contractors, that sort of thing. And the district is going to be responsible for taking care of their utility lines during construction and after construction. So we also want to talk a little bit about what is on the bridge, because there are several different things besides your facilities. There are other facilities as well. So as you can see in this picture, that we have it posted as a weight limit. And to give you an idea, the legal load is 25 tons for a two-axle vehicle, and right now it's rated at 8 tons. So it's about three times less than what is legally a legal load to be. These other numbers represent, let me go back here. I'm getting ahead of myself here. There we go. These other numbers represent vehicles with three axles and vehicles with four axles. And so you can see what we've rated it at and what the legal load are, and it's far below the legal loads. And just to give you an idea of what's underneath, in case you haven't seen it, this is what it looks like. We have timber piles. We have timber stringers, timber beams. There's also this timber walkway that was added at one point after the original construction. So that's the existing facility that we're looking at. And I did want to talk a little bit about the right-of-way. So the county has right-of-way that was dedicated to the county. It was in 1907. Here's the bridge location in this map. This is 80 feet. So this was intended to be a major thoroughfare at one time. So we have an 80-foot right-of-way that's fairly wide out there, so that we have room to store things during construction. We have room to put your facilities if you want to lay them on the ground while we do the construction. So there's plenty of room to do the construction in the existing spot that we want to do it. So at this point, I'm going to ask Kid to come up and kind of go through the rest of the presentation and talk a little bit more about the technical aspects of the project.
Thank you, Board, for having us. I'm Kid Immel, so I mainly do structural projects, some land surveying, so I'm not a utilities person, and our primary purpose of being here is to talk about utilities. We'll be giving another meeting later this month at the Oceana Advisory Council, and then that will be more of an overall bridge presentation. Where we're at in the project is we anticipate at this time delivering the project in the summer of 2017. It'll be single season construction. So I'll proceed on to the PowerPoints now. So we're constructing a bridge at the exact same location, and like Don said, it's going to be in our right-of-way, so we're not going to need to go in for right-of-way at this time. We are planning on completely closing the road down for construction, and we'll go into some of the construction details at this later on. It'll be for a single season. And the way that it will be constructed, which we'll also go into additionally, is there will more than likely need to be a temporary relocation. There's a forced sewer main and a water main and also a gas line that are on the bridge. The OCSD's sewer line and water line will likely need to be temporarily relocated. Then once the bridge is constructed, be relocated permanently to the new structure. This project is funded by FHWA and administered by Caltrans, so this money, that the funding that is available is strictly for bridge construction. The new bridge will be maintains the opening length and opening height of the existing bridge. It's the span length underneath is just slightly longer than the existing bridge, and the underclearance is kept just as high as the existing bridge. So this is what we're planning at. This may be modified as we go through the permitting process, specifically through the Coastal Commission review process, and if depending on what type of comments we get back from the public. But this is where we're at right now. So this is what the bridge should look like. So this slide here shows how we currently see our utilities being relocated. So right now we're at the CEQA stage where we have what roughly amounts to a 30% design. So we're moving in to, once we complete the CEQA environmental process, which we'll be releasing our CEQA document for review, for 30-day review this month, then we, after that, in about a month or two, we'll be proceeding with our 65% design. And this will be an excellent time to get the utilities involved in how they want to relocate their facilities. In past experience on projects, it's been much easier than this in my career, because the utilities have been able to relocate without being so integrally tied to our project. This is going to take a lot of coordination between the district personnel and the county to be done right. This is right here. As you can see, we're planning on providing some notches underneath the bridge and locations for hangers so that the utilities, including electrical, but there is overhead electrical, but that's up to them whether they want to put it inside the bridge. They can maintain their overhead. But right now we're tentatively thinking we can put the sewer on one side and the gas line on the other as the permanent relocations. This is the cross-section of the new bridge. It includes two traffic lanes and sidewalks. We kept it as narrow as it could be and still have two sidewalks and traffic lanes. There's no parking on the bridge. So utilities will be affected. There's sewer, there's high-pressure gas. It's a 4-inch line. It's not a major transmission line, but it is high-pressure gas, which makes it dangerous. We need to be careful, take precautions so it's not dangerous. There's water and there's electrical communication lines and overhead. So here is about where our understanding of where the existing lines are. Right here is an existing, this is the bridge. Here's the proposed sidewalks. Here's the other proposed sidewalks. Here's the Elks Lodge parking over here and the entrance to the park, in case you're wondering what this is. Here's the existing overhead line, and then electrical line. Here is the gas line, existing gas line, and then here is the sewer and water. So down here is how we see it all getting relocated, the blue being the water and the yellow being the sewer. And the reason why we see it being relocated by this is because the understanding is the water code has a 10-foot minimum clearance right now, so it looks like there may be a non-standard situation here that may or may not be allowed. It's ultimately up to the district to design its own utility relocations. Our bridge designer, will work with the utility owners to do it as best we can and everything else, but like I said, we're structure survey people. It's up to the district to design to figure out what's going to be accepted by the state, what's going to be allowable to get this done. So here, to give some idea of how difficult this will be during construction, the current plan is to drive sheet piles on each side of the bridge, just of a right-of-way line, and then that way we can dewater and work in this area as much as we need to construct the bridge. So we will actually be driving equipment down here with sheet pile and even pumping water out from here. So when we drive the sheet piles, the utilities will need to temporarily relocate their lines off of the bridge, potentially hanging them off of the sheet piles or line them on the bottom of the lagoon, and unless they can shut them off. They are main, so that's up to the district to determine if they can shut these lines off. That would make it a lot easier if something could just be shut off and then turned back on once it was permanently relocated. But the temporary relocation, this is where the district will need to work with us and our design consultant so that the contractor, the bridge contractor, can get all this done without conflicts during the utility relocation project process. So we're approaching the stage where we need to start having meetings and ideas about cooperation and planning and any potential agreements that may pertain to coordinating this with the bridge contractor, our design engineer, and the people involved. Like, as I previously said, the utility owners design their own relocations. The county will provide a place for the utility owners to relocate. So we make the utility owner whole, is what I've heard it called in the past. So we are going to provide a place for the utilities to be relocated. So the typical utility process, the main milestones are notifying the owner, and this is one of the methods. We also send out a number of letters. The next major milestone will be liability. It's also up to the district to make its own liability claim if it feels that the county is liable for any of the costs involved in the utility relocation. Naturally, after we receive a liability claim, if there is a claim of liability, we investigate that, and would also ultimately Caltrans and FHWA would have to approve the reimbursable funds for that. And then the last thing is a notice to owner, which just says, move your utilities. Okay, so the county will follow up with the liability letter, the next main milestone. We may have a meeting between then. And we'll also be outlining some requests for information in the liability letter or somewhere else, such as the preferred size and type of conduits, preferred hanger types and necessary casings, plan for accommodating seismic movement, and we are looking at about 6 inches of horizontal movement. So our designer and the county will work with the utility company to figure out the best relocation strategy that makes sense for everyone. Summing it up, the bridge is in a state of decay. It's the pile supports. It was built in 1940, so when you see those poles coming out of the water, they decay right where the water is. They get wet, then they dry off, and they get wet, and the timber just doesn't last that long, even with the creosote on it. So that's really, and Caltrans sends divers down there. They've cored it, and that's what they think it's good for. One-third of legal loads, which the legal loads are set by the California Vehicle Code. So that's the max weight that you can just drive on the road without telling anybody. So we're at one-third of that load. So this bridge is definitely a prime candidate for replacement. So we're putting in a bridge the same length, same height. We're maintaining all the span length and everything else to assure that it just has the minimal impact. We're in a park there and the Elks Lodge and everything else. We just want to provide the minimum impact to the community. The utilities crossing the bridge, they're on that bridge that's decaying and falling apart, so there's really no way around that. They just have to be relocated, and the road will be relocated during construction this summer. And any questions for Don or I?
I have a couple questions.
Okay, let's
go ahead. I got questions.
Let's have Karen and then Lori.
That's fine. I think I know the answer to this, but would there be any possibility of rerouting our lines so they would not go over the bridge, period? And what I'm looking at is once they get underneath the bridge, they're going to be hell to repair, if we had to repair. I mean, now at least they're on the sides.
We can definitely look at the different options. The sewer line is a force main line, though, which means it's a pressurized sewer line, and relocating that through the streets and in a different route would definitely be more expensive than what our obligations are going to be here. With the water lines, typically those would be something that would be easier to cut off, but then we would lose the looping associated with water flows and risk degradation of water quality. So,
like I said, I thought I knew the answer, but
Corey?
When you get ready to put this in, I'm assuming you're going to use concrete for the pillars underneath to hold the board. You're not going to go back to wood, right?
Yeah, I think they're spec'd right now. They're anticipating 3-foot diameter columns or 2.5.
Okay.
Yeah, 2 concrete columns.
Okay. And one other thing. Is this going to start the summer of 2017? Is that correct?
It's very probable.
Okay.
Like I said, we're completing our environmental document process, and we'll go into the permitting. I suppose the kind of the unknown at this point would be the Coastal Commission. I've heard stories where they could delay it significantly, but
yeah, they can.
We appear most probably to be on track for summer of 2017.
Okay. The reason I ask is because that's peak time for traffic down in that whole area there between the lagoon and the camping and all that stuff. So hopefully you'll have a big enough area to contain your stuff so you're not interrupted with people trying to cross through and find out where they're going to go and all that type of stuff, because they will automatically turn down Air Park. They do all the time, and then they loop back around to get up on Highway 1 when it's backed up.
Okay. We're trying our best at public outreach. I'm sure there's going to be some. It's not going to go perfectly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I talked to the state parks, too. Maybe they can help you with that as far as trafficking.
Matt?
I just... I know this isn't tonight's presentation, but there's another bridge over that one that goes to the sewer plant that's probably about the same age and been running big trucks full of brine over it a lot lately, and I don't know if...
I wonder how much safety factors in there and Caltrans is rating. They have some sort of safety factor in there, like say it's 1.5 or something.
Right.
I feel that 1.5 provides for some air in case because there's a lot of uncertainty in their rating, so there's some sort of safety factor in there, so they're... Maybe they're pushing it, maybe they're not. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm just wondering. I was over at over there talking to a couple of residents a week or two ago and saw trucks going by, and I thought, man, that bridge sure, it's making a lot of noise. It must be moving underneath there. So,
I think that's a much newer bridge than this one.
It is.
It's a replacement bridge.
I'm not familiar with it offhand. It's been a while since I've been out to the site.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I appreciate the efforts that are going into this and look forward to seeing the new bridge. Thank you.
I have a couple questions for you. On expenses, first of all, I have to say the time, how long it's taken to put this bridge in place, and you're planning on breaking ground in 2 more years, and you started, the first slide said 2012, so 2017, that's a long time, for a bridge that might have, safety issues. The one thing, too, is the Oceano View Terrace is the one from 1907. Is that what you're using as your original footprint?
No, we reestablished the right-of-way lines.
The one that says Ocean View Terrace.
Well, let's just see that here.
Yep. Madam President, as kids going to the slide, 1907 was when their right-of-way was originally established.
I just want to know if he's using that as the footprint or just as a nice little picture.
I usually bring this up because this is what established the original property lines for this entire subdivision, including the roadway lines. It's this 1907 map. There's a... I reviewed the survey data and the surveying stuff. We have a survey manager in the department.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a licensed land surveyor, but I looked at what he found, and there was a ton of monumentation out there. The right-of-way lines are well established.
Yes, they are.
There's monuments out there, and we have positive identification of our right-of-way.
Okay, great. That answers my question for that.
But this is very interesting. I find this map interesting.
It's all very interesting, and particularly, how nicely it's laid out on paper. So I guess my main question would be is the expense. We build things into our annual budgets, and then we work towards, staying within those lines. And so are we going to be expected to pay for removing all our water and sewer lines and then putting them in a temp place and then coming back and placing them in a permanent space? And
my understanding is yes.
Yeah, because the way you said bridge only made me think, oh, take a footnote there.
And that is standard. When we have water, wastewater, other types of pipelines within a road or within a bridge, mm-hmm. We're operating under the permission of roads, or if it's Caltrans underneath the permission of Caltrans. And typically then if there's a road or a bridge project and it requires utility relocation, then that's at our expense. There are exceptions to the rule. Sometimes a pipeline predates the actual establishment of a road easement. And so a pipeline sometimes have priorities. I'm not anticipating that that's going to be the case in this particular situation. So in the vast, vast majority of the situations, yeah, it's the utility company's obligation to relocate and then to do the permanent work when the roads and the bridges have to be modified.
Correct. So, and this isn't directed towards you. So I guess as the board starts building our annual budgets, we do have to keep it in mind that there are other entities such as Caltrans, the county and stuff coming in, and there might be expenses associated with them in their upgrades. So I'm thinking out loud, basically, is that we have to keep that in mind and have to budget that in, because I had no idea that we would be expected to pay for part of this.
So the contrast is the Highway 113th Street drainage project that the county is working on right now, because the drainage, subsurface drainage lines that they're designing will come into conflict with some of our lines, and because the drainage lines have to work with gravity flow, it's the pressurized lines that have to move. But the question in that one that we're still evaluating with the county is that's not a road project, it's not a bridge project that's being proposed, and it's a county project within Caltrans right-of-way. They have a cooperative agreement on that, and whether that has a bearing or not is another question. But in that situation, they're talking about a drainage project that conflicts with a waterline project. And that particular issue we have to evaluate more closely as to whether or not we'll be required at our expense to move the waterline, because that's not a foregone conclusion.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
I do have one question.
And now there's more questions.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
I was just curious. Do you know, or can you tell me when the district would need to have the design plans prepared by?
They should start working with us in the next few months, because we need to put it into our contractor to coordinate and work around whether, and there's a whole number, the district's just going to have to work with us, because there's a whole number of possibilities. I don't want to go into them, but there's possible agreements on who does the work, and there's just too many things, but the district should start working with us probably in about 2 months. We should probably have an on-site meeting with our design consultant and Caltrans to look at how they're going to relocate.
Okay, thank you.
And do that in coordination with our 65% plans.
Right, it would go into that. Okay.
Karen?
Thank you. Is there any availability of grants or some kind of enumeration to this portal of this district?
The best hope would be CDBG money, partly because that's also controlled by a county board of supervisors, but far from, making any promises that we'll be able to get any grants for this work.
We will try.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing, what kind of permits are you going to have to get for the dewatering?
Well, the main one being the Regional Water Quality Control Board. We also need... We need permits from Fish and Game. We're a control. There's endangered species there that we're dealing with. There's going to be a tremendous oversight from NOAA Fisheries, from National Fish and Wildlife Service, from Fish and Game, from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. There's a plethora of permits that we have to abide by and attain.
Are you getting those right now?
We're doing the environmental document phase, so yes, right now we're getting our approvals through National Marine Fisheries Service and Fish and Wildlife Service, and now that we are completing our CEQA document, then at that point we'll move into getting permits from Regional Water Quality Control Board, Fish and Game, Army Corps of Engineers, and so on. Okay. That's the main part of my job, actually, is getting permits, I think, is probably what takes most of my time.
Yeah, thank you.
Does anybody else have any more questions?
I have a question for staff. Do we need to bring this back on an agenda, or just staff understand to engage the engineers, or what's the process?
Your board certainly will have action items that will be necessary, multiple action items, you know, in the coming months.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Immel.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right.
I have, if public I might, comment. Madam President, prior to public comment, you know, we addressed the issue of expense. There's a question of timing, you know, 2012 to 2017. And one of the challenges with road and bridge projects is you got to get into the FHWA queue. So first you have to establish eligibility, and then you have to get into their funding cycles. So all things considered, this is certainly within timing I would normally expect. But the last one is really for the members of the board who also sit on the Oceano Advisory Committee, and that is to look at the design of the rail.
Yes.
Because Caltrans was recently presenting some of their designs on the bridge over Highway 1, and some of the feedback is that if we follow consistencies in designs on the bridge rails, then it'll establish more of a community type of a design concept. And so I'm sure OAC will be looking at that.
It's actually, they have attended, was it last year? They did attend. And did we make decisions at that time about which design?
I can give us some direction.
Some direction, okay.
Yeah, and we do have another meeting on October 26th.
You are coming to that.
So we'll be back and doing a similar presentation.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason why I wanted to mention it is because I knew about their earlier discussion,
okay.
And it was really since then that Caltrans came and OAC made some decisions on
Highway
the
1.
Rail bridge, the design over Highway 1.
It would be nice if they matched.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would look very good.
All right. Okay, I'm going to...
I think that Don also wanted to cover one other item, which is some of their upcoming payment.
Just briefly.
Okay, and then we're going to open up for public comment, because I think some of the public might have questions.
So did you have a preference on... Do you have South Elm, 22nd Street, and Pass Robles Street?
Why don't we hear it now? I think that would be best.
Either one.
Any of them?
Yes.
Okay.
So I just wanted to take a quick moment at this meeting just to kind of briefly talk about it. And I know your staff has brought it up to you before, but we're in the process of designing some overlay projects and surface treatment projects in Oceano. So this we have three roads that we're going to be overlaying come next spring. One of them is Elm Street. I know this is hard to see, but I just wanted to give you an idea of what the limits are that we're working in. This is Elm Street. This is Highway 1 up to, it'll probably be Basin. That's the street that's, I think, last in the county. This is Paul Place, which is in the city. So right at this line is where we're going to start and come right down here to South Elm Street. Next.
And what are you going to do there?
We're going to overlay the road with a new asphalt overlay. It'll probably be an inch and a half thick, and we're just going to cover the road with new asphalt.
There's a lot of road construction there right now up towards the pike, just yards from where you're talking about stopping.
I noticed that.
Are they going to, I think that's a Roy Grandy. Are they going to pave that, repave that, or is that just going to be a nice, beautiful road and then Grover Beach-esque sort of jog your teeth?
I do not know at this point. That's a good question, though. I was out there just a little while ago, and I did see the construction equipment, but I'm not sure exactly.
Because of that apartment complex. Is that what
it's
it is?
It's a drainage project.
Okay.
Okay. So the answer is no.
It's on the east side of the road of Elm.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, so this is another section that we're going to do, and this is... 22nd Street, and we're going to go from Silver Spur up to Route 1. That's another section of road that we're going to be doing with this project. And then the next slide on the next city map is on Paso Robles Street. And on Paso Robles, we're going to be going from Highway 1 all the way to Elm.
Right here. Great.
So, and I noticed out there today that pretty much from about 22nd Street or so, this way is probably the worst section, but there's some bad spots in here too. So we are going to actually pave this whole section of roadway, this section of Elm and this section of 22nd Street. That is all contained in our pavement management program. It's a 5-year program that's on our website.
Okay.
I won't bore you with it right now, but if you're interested, you can go on the Public Works page. And I'd be happy to come back and do a presentation on that if you'd like.
Mary, I have a question.
But those are the three roads. The reason I'm bringing up, too, is because you're actually going to have to do some relocation of some facilities. As we pave over the road, you're going to have to raise your manholes and valve covers for your water lines, and so there's a little bit of expense there, but I wanted to bring that to your attention, too.
And just before I take a couple more questions, how do you prioritize which roads get fixed?
That's a great question. The way we do that is we've gone out and we've measured every single road in the county. We have 1,092 miles of paved roads. We have 243 miles of unpaved roads. So we went and we looked at all the paved roads and we rated them from 0 to 100. And so we call that the pavement condition index. And so these roads have a low pavement condition index. We generally look at roads that are 55 and above. We can surface treat those with some sort of chip seal or slurry or whatever. Roads that are below that need some more, structural element. They need to have an overlay put on them. And so these roads have a low pavement condition index. That's why they're on this list.
Matt, then Lori, and then Karen.
So on the Paso Robles, especially where the part approaching Elm Street, there's some homeowners, property owners that have been subject to the county ordinance that makes them do curb and gutter, and it's a very hodgepodge curb and gutter. There will be a sidewalk right at the end for one property length, maybe 60 or 80 feet wide, with a telephone pole right in the middle of the sidewalk. I mean, it's absolutely useless. Is there going to be an approach to unify this, to put curb and gutter down the whole thing, or let these people have their sand lot back in front of their house, or what's going to happen there?
Well, the one thing that we are going to do as part of this project, which we are required to do for the American Disability Act, is we will be looking at the existing curb ramps to make sure that they're up to a code for ADA compliance. We will, however, not be filling in any gaps in sidewalks. This is strictly a paving project, and so those gaps will probably have to be filled in by the property owners at some time when they desire or have the finance to do so.
So you might have a beautiful ADA curb ramp and then 30 feet later be back into the sand.
There may be a
right
situation.
Next to it, be back in the
right, if not 30, if less, yeah.
Yeah, there are examples where you have a corner curb ramp and there's no sidewalk adjoining to it.
Right, I think we're going to have that there. Yeah.
Okay, so Lori? Karen?
Yeah, I was just going to ask if there was any consideration for making some possible ways that people could walk on the edge of those roads or at least push them out enough so that, because without sidewalks,
it is hit and miss sometimes on some of these roads. We don't have a mechanism at this point for this particular project, but there may be an opportunity to do other things with other financing mechanisms that would fill in those gaps that would continue sidewalk.
Doing it half, really just doing half of the project that needs to be done. One more little quickie. I come from the community of Halcyon, and I am assuming you just don't even consider the small hamlets and their roads.
Of Halcyon, if they're county maintained roads, they are in our maintained system. They're in this book, and they will be or have been evaluated for any kind of pavement treatment. Yes.
Okay, I'll just look in the book. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, and what was that web page? Because I have to tell you is that when you describe and when I look at the roads that you're going to repair, it actually goes around the most severe neighborhoods. So if you look at it, Beach Street, Ocean Street, Wilmar, and those streets that do not have any sidewalks, you're literally driving in one big pothole. You know, you don't climb out and then go into another one. You just carry on with the same one.
Uh-huh.
That your beautification topping has just nicely carved out the most needed, ignored neighborhoods. And I just have to say that. So you don't have to make any justification or excuses or anything like that. I just need the website again.
Yes, the website is the county's public works page.
Okay, so it's the public works.
And if you go on the right-hand side on the quick links, you'll see the pavement management program.
So,
Thank you.
Don, on that point, though, is it fair to say that part of the evaluation is based on PCI, Pavement Condition Index, but part of the evaluation is also on the volume of traffic that's on particular roads, where the higher volume roads are going to get more attention?
Exactly. Exactly.
Please, don't. I'm almost insulted by that. Because if you look at 22nd Street, mm-hmm. from Highway 1 to Silver Spurs, you cannot begin to tell me that there is more traffic there than there is on Ocean, Wilmar, any of the other streets. Please. I mean, I understand, but I'll go to the website.
Exactly.
And thank you for fixing our roads.
You're welcome. And if you do have a question, please give me a call. You can reach me at, I can give you my phone number, and I'll give you my card, and I'd be happy to take or address any
questions. We're just a little sensitive about not having roads here, I guess.
That's
sidewalks.
Absolutely. So. I'd be happy to talk to you about it at any time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. Public comment on these projects?
Good evening. Tucker. I'm Julie Tacker, and I have a little heartburn over the charm that bridge has, and I'm hopeful that in the new architectural design that somehow you can retain, maybe it's, some kind of wood look, so that it still, you know, feels that funky Oceano. I think it's cool. And then I am curious, and I will be interested when it comes to your board, how you're going to prioritize the costs associated with this. Sounds like some of this engineering is coming quickly, and your budget was pretty tight and not a lot of flexibility in your water fund. You have way more money in your sewer fund, but... even these paving projects have a certain amount, potentially a certain amount of engineering costs associated with them. And then I would love somebody to throw out a ballpark what kind of, for relocation of the bridge utilities, what might that be? Because I think it's going to upset, some of the priorities you already had. Because you're going to have to push it up quicker to get done so that these guys can move forward. And I know you have a generator and a well and some other things that also have high priority. So, sorry to bore you, Mary.
No, you're not. I'm sorry.
You're rolling your eyes again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Really, I'm not rolling my eyes at you, but they are burning, but I'm not rolling my eyes at you. Does anybody else have any more public comment? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to move right along. Tony, Mr. Maricino, the man puts a smile on our faces.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So Lopez is at 15,301 acre feet, which is 31% full. State water deliveries for Oceano is just over 420 acre feet. We pumped just over 125 acre feet. And all the water that's getting delivered is state water. It's not Lopez this year. We've had no SSOs for the month of September. I've had 12 work orders, 11 USAs, 13 customer service calls. We had two after-hours call-outs. One was for a house on Paso Robles that the son was doing a repair on the service line, did not communicate with his mom, and she called our on-call operator, and he identified the house valve was turned off. So the son was taking a little longer than expected and did not communicate with his mom.
Uh-oh.
The second call out was water running off in the street at 2475. It was the irrigation line was broke. So the on-call operator went out there, shut off the irrigation meter, and notified the property manager. We've been replacing water meters. We had a service line break at 2300 Cienega, space 12. And we completely replaced a new service line at the location. We had a 4-inch water main break behind Efron's. That line was from 1952. It was right where the fire happened, where the fire trucks were at, putting out roughly a week earlier. So that got repaired. It's got multiple repairs on that line. We've also been replacing meters, raising meter boxes in the alleyways, equipment checks, all the state reporting was done for the month on time. That pretty much covers everything. Any questions?
Board have any questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hear a lot of good things about the field, though.
Everything's going pretty well.
Yeah.
Even with the breaks, everything goes well during the break.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Ogren, would you like to report on Zone 3, sir?
The next meeting will be in November. The last meeting, which was in September, I previously reported out and had provided the good news also that the county had adopted the recharacterization of the 2014 water supplies. That now provides us approximately 700 and some acre feet in storage in total at Lopez Reservoir, and is obviously vitally important during this drought.
So, the Zone 3, has anybody whispered El Ninos, or are they not? Are they afraid?
Well, the conventional discussion amongst the weather experts is that we are going to have an El Nino.
Okay.
You know, this time last year they were predicting it, but they were softer on their predictions, and as we approached winter, they started getting even softer. But this year they continue to be strong in their predictions on an El Nino. There had been some concerns that it might miss us because of water temperatures that were maybe too warm up north, and they've seen that those temperatures are coming down. So, you know, the bottom line is they believe that there's going to be areas of California, at least, that are going to get a lot of rainfall. They just don't know which areas in California are going to get that much rainfall. It's a big state. You know, there's still a good chance that some of the regions in the state will not get as much rain as others. And so, good thing is that Oceano has a diversified water supply. We obviously have, you know, water sources on the central coast, if that's where the rain is, and we have water that comes from Northern California, if that's where the rain hits. So we'll just keep our hopes up that it's a good winter.
Well, it definitely does feel differently than it did last year. I mean, today it spritzed today. Last year at this time it wasn't spritzing. You know, it was still kind of hot.
Yes.
So you can definitely tell that there's a change happening. I just don't know if it's for the good or the bad. there was another question I wanted to ask you, too, is that now that people are, allowed, I shouldn't use the word allowed, but have moved towards changing the policy of storing what little excess water people have in Lopez, and the good thing about that is it keeps the plant operating. As the water gets lower, the plant has a tendency to stop. So if there's an El Nino and that reservoir does decide it's going to open its arms and, you know, accept the rain, what happens to the stored water in there?
Yeah, under the current low reservoir response plan, as soon as the Board of Supervisors lifts the emergency, then the ability to store goes away. The idea being at that point in time, in that particular year, we would want to see about maximizing our Lopez. Meanwhile, at the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, there's discussions about proposing contract amendments that would give the Zone 3 agencies a right to store water even in normal situations.
Oh, that's good.
So that's been on the agenda. The detailed discussions haven't occurred yet, but I would anticipate that they do occur in 2016. If permanent changes are made to the contracts that allow storage on an ongoing basis, and if that's done before the drought is over, especially, or in the same year that the drought is over, then maintenance of the water and storage may be possible. modifying the Lopez contracts in order to accomplish that objective has happened in other contracts, Whale Rock, State Water, and numerous different contracts, where agencies who benefit from the water supply have storage rights that did not exist when those original projects were developed. So it's my opinion that we have a very good likelihood of seeing some changes in the Lopez contracts because those changes have been implemented in other water supply projects in other areas.
Okay. Thank you. And you'll keep us posted on that?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Is there anybody else who'd like to add anything?
Okay. No, thank you.
All right. Is there anybody who would... Well, let's do 6C, and then we'll go back and do public comment. Director Angelo, do you have anything you'd like to report on?
No, I didn't attend any meetings.
Okay.
None of my meetings occurred either.
Okay. Karen?
Yeah. First, I should mention that I had cataract surgery. The reason I'm wearing these dark glasses, I think it looks really weird at night. There was a fire prevention fair Saturday at Ramona Park. A lot of parents, a lot of kids. At all the agencies, Five Cities Fire Authority hosted it, but there was Smokey Bear was there, U.S. Forest Service, Red Cross, Cal Fire, Sheriff's Department, and probably the hit of the morning was the California Highway Patrol helicopter came sliding on in and landed at the park and was there for a couple hours, and lots of little kids got to go see what it's like to sit in the seat of a helicopter, and then they just lifted off and they were gone in 10 seconds.
Wow.
So it was really, really nice. And I found out something I thought was so interesting, I want to share it. I talked to the pilot of the helicopter. He is the absolute arbitrator of where and when that helicopter is used. He's outranked by a lot of people, but a CHP commander cannot order him to take that helicopter anywhere that he doesn't feel safe about taking it. He's the absolute captain of that. I thought that was very interesting because it certainly would reduce the risk if the guy who's flying it is the one who has the final say. I just thought it was a real interesting fact.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So when you see the black and white and gold and blue CHP helicopter flying over, and he goes all the way from all over the Central Coast and as far as Fresno, sometimes he could get a call over there, up the coast, down the coast, all over Yosemite. He's flown into Yosemite for rescues. But most of what they do is in some way or another helping people. They don't do just, you know, look for speeders or something like that. And they help every one of the law enforcement and fire agencies. And the co-pilot is a EMT who's trained to land the helicopter but not take it off. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Matt?
Yeah, thank you. I attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting last week. There was actually a special meeting, and then there was the regular meeting. The special meeting was to interview different law firms for the position of district legal counsel. We are, at this point, have conducted those interviews and are looking into background reference checks, I should say. We additionally got a report on the case versus the State Water Resource Control Board. That's the case that's being heard in the County of Sacramento, which is the writ that was taken following the 2012 administrative civil liability hearing following the December of 2010 spill. And what had happened, the background was that there's five causes of action that were the basis of the writ. The state demurred on every single cause of action. The demur was not sustained on four, but it was sustained on one cause of action with leave to amend. And so basically what that is it's a win at the pleading stage for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. And there will be an amended, I think it already has been filed, I'm not sure, petition that's filed for that one cause of action that was we were given leave to amend. And so what that basically means is that the judge has looked at their pleadings and has looked at our particular pleadings and has said that on the basis of the pleadings, there is, if assumed to be true, not weighing the facts, if assumed to be true, there is a cause of action that could be brought by the sanitation district. So that's where it's at. State may or may not demur again on the new filing for the one cause of action. We will wait and see what happens with that, and then it'll move forward towards a hearing. And I do not have a date on that particular hearing. When we might expect that to happen, I don't know.
You know, I know that there was a threat of pulling that litigation and trying to negotiate into just paying the full fine. And so I know there's a lot of pressure on that board, and I want to thank you for hanging in there. Because you know, most of the majority of the legal costs had already been spent.
Incurred.
And 1.4 is a lot of money. So to continue on through that political pressure, and I have to applaud you for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The goal here really is to try to protect the ratepayers. And that really is the goal, which is the next part. We had the special the SDRMA suit that was brought for failure to cover those particular expenses. That continues to be ongoing, I am hopeful that we will be able to recuperate those fees that have and those expenses that have been spent by the ratepayers and for the sanitation district. The catch there is whatever we do recuperate. Which is hopefully the whole amount, we will have to pay the attorneys, which are on a contingency. So the Schindler Law Group is representing us on that particular cause of action, and I am hopeful on that we'll be able to recuperate those fees, save the ratepayers money on the assessment, and then recuperate the legal fees. So that is the goal. We also learned that the influent pipe, which was broken, if you remember, they found breaks in the influent pipe going into the plant. We took emergency action. I think it was a $360,000 anticipated cost. It came in under budget, not by much, but it came in under budget, and that is up and running again. And the very good thing with that is that the plant that was stressed, we had been violating our discharge numbers on our effluent. When this pipe was down, it seems to be gelling again, and the bugs are happier, and our effluent numbers are better now, and so they're within the permit limits.
Great,
which is very good. Final two things. One is that we received a preliminary design report for a grit removal system. Not that exciting, but necessary. And then we did adopt the resolution pledging to follow best practices of civility and civil discourse in all meetings. Something I forgot my button tonight. It's in my other car, so I didn't bring it. But thank you.
Okay. I attended the sanitation district the second half. It started at 3:45, and so I attended the second half. The Water Resource Advisory Committee was a lot of updating and deciding whether they wanted to put together a subcommittee to address some more water conservation measures and a few other things. And then I did a little public outreach for Oceano on the Brad Pomerantz Show.
Can't wait to
see
it.
So that was my busy week.
California edition.
And on that note, General Manager Ogren, would you like to add anything to this part of the agenda?
I'm not sure if we heard from Director Blackburn.
I didn't have any reports.
She signaled to me. Okay, and on that note, we'll take public comment for items on number 6.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And first I want to say, Matt, I thought the term Grover Beach-esque was genius.
Thank you. And you're correct, it is.
Los Osos-esque, pre-sewer. We have nicer roads now.
And they will too.
Grover Beach.
Yeah, they're paying.
There's a lot of work going on out there, and I see the signs.
Fortunately, have it combined with our sewer bill.
Absolutely.
Director Blackburn and President White maybe should take the opportunity here to promote the Oceano Advisory Council Monday. I know you will again a little later probably, but Monday, October 26th, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. in this room to talk about wet weather preparedness. There was a discussion at the Board of Supervisors yesterday about that. Someone spoke in public comment, Mr. Sweetland, who's very concerned about the island, and then Mr. Edwards also spoke during this item yesterday. Public Works Director gave a pretty good presentation, talked about what happened in 2010, and I encourage you to check out the replay. I saw the agenda for the Five Cities Fire Authority for Friday, and there's an item on there related to increased benefits for management, and I don't know the answer, and maybe I won't hear it here either, but how many managers are there that would benefit from this increase in benefits? The other thing, I did attend the South County Sanitation District meeting also and read the causes of action and demur, et cetera. The way I understand it is the district is asking for another hearing, and that they're not asking to be relieved of the fine, but to have the opportunity to plead their case again before the water board. And my only concern about pursuing that is that, as I recall, the argument during the hearing was that you were an enterprise fund, you didn't have the money to pay a fine, didn't believe you were legally, that you legally could spend the money from the ratepayers to pay a fine, and now that you have a bit of a surplus in funds, I don't know that you could make that same argument again, and I'm curious where that's going. I thought, and I'm pretty sure I heard it at this board, that a settlement was what you all wanted to do, and I don't know if that will be tried again, but certainly whatever's best for the ratepayer needs to be pursued.
Thank you. May I say something?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for reminding me, Ms. Tucker, about the advisory council. We do have a meeting on Monday the 26th, and there will be a presentation about wet weather preparedness from the County Public Works, and there will be lots of information about work that's been done since the flooding in 2010, and also information about what you can do to prepare on your property and if you are in the area. But there will also be information about the bridge at that time as well, and some other information. So please do attend.
Thanks, Jen. Okay. Particularly if we get an El Nino.
Mr. Schickler.
Joe Schickler. Oh, Mr. Schickler, Eckler.
Joe Checker, Security Court, Oceano. Since we did bring up El Nino and flooding, I wasn't able to attend the supervisor meeting yesterday, but I watched the whole thing today, which is really neat to have that opportunity. I was elated to see one of the spokespersons go up there in behalf of us, given a clear, detailed summary of what the flooding was in 2010, why it occurred. I was disappointed in watching the public works person, though, contrary to what we heard before. Most of it seems to be reactive type action that should be taken after the flooding occurs. Some of it was what the county can do now to clear culverts and ditches. But they again have their head in the silt and they're not addressing some of the major causes that the island was flooded. They keep alluding to the flapgates worked properly. They alluded to why they close when they're open because of the tide. I just want to bring this up again. We've got to be all vigilant this time around on trying to get proactive measures taken to stop the flooding when we know specifically why some of it occurred. We also went to a supervisor who's not with us anymore and to the then Public Works Director. He was supposed to get a permit to do a 10-foot cut through there and then use that as an example to proceed with more permits to do a more thorough job on the lagoon so the water could flow from the island through the gates into the ocean. After the 10-foot cut was done, that encouraged more growth, didn't help at all, cost a couple hundred thousand, I think, or more. It didn't help at all. Nothing more that we know has been done. Nothing. Nothing has been done to let the water flow from the island through the gates. It's two matters here. It's how the gate works and how the water flows. So anyway, the spokesman that got up there, I've been on the fence about he represents our community or not here. He did a fine job. I was embarrassed that we didn't have anybody else there except Terry Sweetland, who gave a good presentation too. But if it wasn't for this other spokesman, there should have been more people there calling this public works person on the carpet for doing more proactive actions than how to deal with the flood once it comes there. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe.
I didn't want to give an answer to him.
I wasn't at the meeting, so I can't.
Well, I can answer what happened with the Tootleys.
Well, I think that we've regurgitated that for six years. Joe, I'll look at the tapes and see, you know.
They're doing a fine job there, but they're not being proactive, and they're not addressing some of the real reasons why the flooding occurred at the plant and on the island.
Well, you know, I was thinking actually maybe there might be more better bang for the buck at the Oceano Advisory when the county does come and the Director of Public Works does come and the supervisor is there, that, you know, locals who, you know, because the bottom line is the island is almost below sea level, you know, so I'm not saying there's nothing you can do because we can always do something, right? But there's where the strategic planning is going to really happen around that, and I think that that's where our voices would really be.
That's where it needs to be done.
Yeah.
Not doing it now.
Yeah.
And it's too late to look for this year's flooding.
Well, I don't think it's too late, but
they're telling us what to do when it floods.
Right. So, but I'll watch the tape tonight or tomorrow morning, and we'll hook up before the weekend.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I was just going to mention the fact that this sounds like an excuse, but it isn't one. The county has not been able to get the permits from the federal and state people to do the work. It's pure and simple. There's nine different agencies that have to permit that. When the reeds were cut that time, they found a red-legged frog, they had to quit. It was not completed because it was an endangered species challenge. And we all voted for the environmental rules. I certainly am guilty of supporting them myself. So, I mean, it's, you know, you're between a rock and a hard place. Sometimes.
There's an issue of the gate, the flap, so that we should address. If we know we can't tackle the red-legged frog issue because of our stupidity in voting that in. We have an issue of the flaps, and that's where they're wrong.
Thanks.
I agree with you. We got to vote that frog out or something. Did they really find one?
Well, you need to call a gopher. I mean,
no,
a beaver.
Snake. A moccasin, a water moccasin. That'll help it.
You know what? There's almost nothing left now because the reed and the silt has pushed everything out of there.
That's right.
The intentions of protecting endangered species that's no longer valid. There's nothing, there's no water. It's a shame. There's no water left in most of the lagoon.
It could be very rapidly.
Okay, I'm going to move this agenda. The consent agenda items. Did anybody have a chance to look at that, read those minutes? Any corrections to that? Anybody?
No.
I couldn't find an extra typo. All the periods were in place. Everything.
It's the lowest warrants ever, I think. So.
Yeah, you too, Jen, huh? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
Do you want to?
And I like the warrant pack. I love the warrant pack. Was it $1,400?
Would you like to take a public comment on the consent agenda before you make a motion?
Well, if I must, of course I would. Okay. Does anybody have any public comment before we call the vote on any closed session item? I mean, consent items. Okay. Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve as presented.
Second.
There was a race for second.
I don't know. Karen can have it.
Karen can have it. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstained? Passes. Great. Okay. Do we want to take a quick 4 minutes? Let's do a quick, we'll adjourn back at 9 to 8. Yeah.
10 to 8.
10 to 8. Fine.
She was kidding.
I was just joking.
Tony, can you help with a couple of lights? Ready?
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, calling this meeting back to order. Now we're going to, we just did that. Let's go to business items. Mr. Ogren, will you lead us through the business items?
Certainly, President Lucy, I would be glad to. A business item today is recommendations on the Employee Memorandum of Understanding with Service Employees International Union, Local 620, otherwise known as SEIU, and some related actions. Basically, there's two recommendations and discussion, three recommendations, two for action, one for not for action, just simply board discussion. The first two is recommendable approval of the Memorandum of Understanding with SEIU and recommend approval of job descriptions. Both of those were subject to meet and confer with the union, and obviously both of those have been included in numerous closed session items over the last couple months, which is protocol for public agencies negotiation with employee unions. And I will say that as I go through the details, SEIU was very understanding of a number of different items, and I think that this round was a positive discussion. And obviously last round was the first time of establishing an MOU with the district and took quite a bit longer. But moving through these three recommendations then, on the MOU itself, in contrast to the current MOU, which is a single year, what's in front of your board is a three-year term through June 30th of 2018. It would be going into effect on July 1st. The pay increases that are established in year one will be retroactive to the first full pay period after July 1st. Increases in wages and certain benefits, and I'll touch on the benefits. The benefit enhancements were relatively nominal. And then because of that, a reopener for health benefits exists for year three. And essentially what that means is that in the spring of 2017, the union has the right to reopen the MOU for discussions on health benefits for the third year. Obviously, if at any time during the three-year period, if the union and your board wish to reopen on many of the other issues, you can do that through mutual agreement. But a reopener for health benefits, the union has that unilateral right to request that
for the third year. In talking about the wage increases, are predominantly they include what we call equity adjustments. And an equity adjustment is one that is not based on cost of living, and I'll talk about cost of living in a second, but it's based on a comparison of the job duties and the wages paid at this district in comparison to other similar duties and other similar local agencies. And in the staff report, I identified that SEIU had put together a wage comparison of numerous different agencies. And in addition to reviewing that salary survey and double-checking numbers that they had presented and double-checking them with the agencies that were included in those salary surveys, that was one of the steps of evaluating that salary survey. But then broadening it to also look at other agencies and other job descriptions to see whether or not what the SEIU was laying out there was reasonable. And I say reasonable because a salary survey of that nature doesn't give definitive numbers on which to base a negotiated result, but gives us a ballpark on it. So that salary survey was used in part to come up with what is incorporated in the MOU. Essentially what it's saying is that the existing wages in Oceano are below comparables, and I don't think that that really comes as a big surprise. And the modifications to the salaries range from 12.5% to 20% on the below comparables. And then a number of the positions also have merit increases that are included in new job descriptions of 7.5%. So the distinction there is the 12.5% to 20% is based on existing job duties and what employees are doing right now. And I'll touch on it in a minute here with respect to the account administrator jobs and the utility operator jobs, that we've gone to a three-level career progression. And what that means is that the existing employees are going to move over to Tier 2 or Level 2. Level 3 is at 7.5% higher, but in order for them to be promoted to Level 3, there's additional requirements or professional development, again, based on incentives and based on merit. And so what's in front of you is a combination of both comparison to other agencies, as well as new job descriptions and merit or professional development possibility for employees. That particular point, and again, I'm probably reiterated a little bit when walking through job descriptions, I think is extremely important for an agency like Oceano CSD, where we have a limited number of individuals who have to do a broad range of responsibilities. In larger agencies where individuals will be specialized, and have a more narrow set of responsibilities, that's a different situation. And what we have here in Oceano is that everybody essentially has to do a much broader range of responsibilities in order to get the job done. And so these merit increases are putting in front of several of the employees the expectation that they develop professionally to a new level and a higher level. That's good for the district. And then there's merit increases in pay that would compensate them for developing those either broader or higher degree of specialization in some other duties. So across the board, it's 20%, but part of it is in comparables and part of it is in merit increases. The last bullet under number one there says cost of living adjustments. And so for July of 2015, there is zero cost of living adjustments, and that is partly recognizing the equity adjustments and the significance of the equity adjustments. So in July of 2015, there is no cost of living adjustments, but in July of 2016 and July of 2017, there will be cost of living adjustments based on the consumer price index, but not less than 2%. I do need to back up a second. The 12.5%, 7.5%, and 20% is not a single year increase. Those increases are implemented over a two-year period. And that's part of, I think, the union's responsiveness to the Oceano budget is recognizing that while wages really do need to match comparables, it's important for recruitment, it's important for retention of employees, but to phase those increases in over a multi-year period is part of the plan here. As I mentioned, benefit enhancements aren't as significant. There is the day after Thanksgiving is added to the holiday schedule. The day after Thanksgiving is common in a lot of places. The modifications to vacation is 3 weeks per year starting at the beginning of year five. Previously, it started at the end of year five. 4 weeks of per year of vacation start at the beginning of year 10 of employment. Previously, it was at the end of year 10, so that there is some enhancement to the vacation schedule. And then the maximum vacation accrual bank is set at 320 hours. I think most people recognize if they start getting up to that maximum, they start planning their vacations. Mm-hmm. But basically, the way that that works is if somebody hits 320 hours, then they get zero additional vacation accruals until they come under 320 hours. And that is also pretty common with public agencies and other agencies where if somebody starts accruing too many vacation hours, you have to let them keep what's on the books, but you can restrict any future accrual of vacation. The MOU, the fiscal impact on this is on our overall budget, is approximately 1%, a little bit less than that. For year two, as I mentioned, and it's phasing in, is approximately another 1 to 1.5%, and over the three-year impact, I'm generally estimating it's about 3%. And those numbers seem awfully small in comparison to, you know, the 20% wage increase, but that's because Oceano CSD has significant fixed costs that are non-labor related, or significant non-labor costs. You know, all of our payments to Five Cities Fire Authority, which are, you know, something starting to approach $1 million a year. That's single payments, that's non-labor. We pay for State Water, we pay for Lopez Water. Both of those are non-labor. So the labor component of our overall budget is relatively small, and therefore the impact of the MOU is itself relatively small. Certainly these numbers are within some of the CPI that we would expect on a bottom line basis in the coming year. So again, the results of these evaluations and negotiations, I think, did well in both recognizing that the employees were being underpaid as well as not having an extremely significant impact on the district's overall budget. Moving on to the job descriptions, there's three different sets of job descriptions: utility system supervisor. It said supervisors there, but we only have one Tony. It's the utility system supervisor. And that is a single classification. Obviously, Tony is the one who is the chief plant operator. His license, his certificate, is the one that the State Water Board relies upon for us to meet our regulatory requirements. It's the utility system operator that now has a 1, 2, and 3 levels in job classifications. The utility system operator job descriptions are predominantly driven based on industry standards and licensing requirements. So all of the existing utility system operators transfer over at the 2 level, and then they will have additional higher licensing requirements that they don't meet right now but that they will have to meet, and other job duties in order to get that career progression into a level 3. A benefit associated with that level 3 career progression then is that we have better ability to backfill for the utility system supervisor, either on a temporary or on a permanent basis. And hopefully on a permanent basis, that will be many, many, many years off into the future. But in any case, it's establishing a good organizational structure here at OCSD to make sure that we can make those transitions when they are necessary. Moving into the account administrator, similarly a 1, 2, 3 career level progression. And those job specifications are tailored more to the specific needs of Oceano. And in contrast to the operators, they're not driven based on licensing requirements from a state agency. We have three different job specs. There are utility billing, the second is accounts payable and expenditures, and the third is payroll and records. And so what we've intentionally done is gone through a lot of specificity on those different areas of responsibility. Again, utility billing, accounts payable and expenditures, and payroll records, because those are the heart and the soul of the professional administrative work that we have to do in the office. The job specifications allow the general manager to assign any of those duties to any of the account administrators. And what they do in essence is help to identify the roles and responsibilities while then providing flexibility to be able to reassign work from one account administrator to another account administrator. That's important because depending on who's on staff, as account administrators or as management staff, different individuals are going to have different strengths and weaknesses. So having a career progression where individuals can have incentive to have a broader set of responsibility or a higher level of technical expertise is incorporated here, but also giving flexibility to reassign duties among the different individuals is important as well. So we've been able to accomplish both of those objectives with these new job descriptions. Now, I will also point out that there are three, again, utility billing, accounts payable, expenditures, and payroll and records, but we have only two positions. So I support with the that the recommendations on all three job descriptions are approved. However, we are still going to only maintain two account administrator positions. For example, previously, payroll was done by a management level personnel. Currently, it's being done by current job title as an account clerk, but the ability to be able to delegate certain tasks to the appropriate level of professional in the office is really important, and payroll is often done by people who are either accounting technicians, account administrators, finance technicians, payroll technicians. So again, what we've as a final point on what we're accomplishing in these job descriptions is assigning the work to the appropriate level, and that will come in a little bit more into relevancy also when I talk about management positions. So those are the job descriptions that are in front of your board, and the final comment that I'm going to make on this. This is one of the most important things that I think that has really been in front of your board. Over the last year, 15 months that I've been working with you, obviously there's been a lot of important water resource issues in front of your board and other issues in front of your board, but establishing good job descriptions and good organizational structure is really the cornerstone to the future of any organization. When vacancies happen, knowing the requirements and the job duties that need to be filled and knowing and then recruiting and finding the individuals who can specifically fill those duties is what's critical in the long run, because good organizational structure, good job descriptions, fair payment of wages is what helps with the longevity of staff. It reduces turnover, but it also simply helps with the recruitment process and making sure that the human resources, as transitions do occur, that new human resources come in. Whatever challenges the district faces in the future, with the appropriate human resources and a good board of directors, those challenges can be, met. I wanted to pause here on the MOU and the job descriptions and see if there's any questions from the board, because those are specific to the action items that are in front of you today. And seeing none, I'll move into... I put into the staff report also as well some discussion on the replacement of the office manager position. What's on the screen and in the staff report was the organizational structure prior to my arrival, and there was both an office manager as well as a district accountant position, and the district accountant position is this one right here. Well, that position is currently vacant because you hired me, and I'm doing double duties as the GM and as the district accountant. And admittedly, those are stretched. What I'd like to have with your board is some discussion about essentially upgrading the office manager position, but combining it with the district accountant so that there's simply one management position in here. I note in the staff report that prior to my arrival, there was two management positions that essentially supervise two non-management positions, and I made some points of that being a bit top-heavy. I think that part of that resulted from the lack of clarity on the roles and responsibilities of everybody who was employed. And right now we have the opportunity to set the future direction for the CSD. And so the discussion is about the combination, combining the office manager and the district accountant position into what I've coined as a business and accounting manager position. You know, the general duties, if your board is so inclined to direct me to develop a job description, would be the things that, you know, range from reviewing contract compliance. We have a lot of different contracts, whether it's the franchise agreements with
the garbage companies, or whether it's State Water or Lopez Water or Five Cities Fire Authority, there's a number of things that relate to contract compliance, and that's a business management function. There's also the basic accounting responsibilities. And as I mentioned earlier, some of the professional accountants were doing payroll duties that really should be done by the paraprofessionals, the account administrators. So the opportunity certainly exists to be able to consolidate these two positions because the account administrators have greater clarity on what their responsibilities are. To back up a second, when I first started, one of our employees had very little to do when I started. So like on our garbage ordinance and some of the other stuff, got the person hopping, got them busy, and got them going. Now we're looking at the opportunity to actually delegate some of the duties to the account administrator position, which then frees up the time to be able to combine these two different positions on a permanent basis. Implications are a couple. One is that by combining the two positions on a long-term basis, and I think I get into this in the next slide, yes, the long-term cost savings is about $30,000 to $40,000 per year because the office manager and the district accountant were combined in the $130,000 per year range. Some basic cost comparisons that are in one of the attachments to the staff report would be looking at a business and accounting manager position. And I would, again, look at a career progression of a 1-2-3 so that we have the opportunity to hire at a lower level or at a higher level, depending on qualifications and depending on the needs. But at the higher level, if that basic salary comparison is valid, then that's something in the $90,000 per range at the top level, which is a savings of $30,000 to $40,000 per year in comparison to these two positions. But there's short-term cost impacts, and that's because I'm currently filling both of the functions, and so, and as we know, when I was hired, my salary was based on both positions, and some roughly based on both positions. So during the term of my contract, this transition would cost somewhere between $10,000 and $35,000 per year more for the district than what you're incurring right now. Now, the last bullet then is, of course, what's the effect on the general manager's duties in my contract? Because by hiring a business and accounting manager position, there's going to be some relief of some details that I need to work on. And because I'm here in the position and for the work of helping your board set the future for Oceano while tackling some of our current duties as well, I think it's only fair for me to say, okay, my contract is, I'm willing to open up my contract because I do think that it is extremely important that this office manager and the district accountant positions get consolidated. I think that that's a critical link. Just as Tony is the field supervisor, supervises the two crews, the business and accounting manager really has to cover this office work, has to cover the accounting functions. It's document management, it's payroll, it's accounts payable. We have work that we need to do on our cost accounting system. But to have one person in there that's well qualified and is able to really carry out the duties of the job is extremely important, and that, in fact, will lend itself in the future to hiring a general manager, which is going to be more consistent with the type of general managers that CSDs would normally be able to recruit for. So I wanted to make sure to include this. It's timely. Certainly, reorganizational efforts of this nature, in part, are dependent on vacancies. We knew that we'd be looking at reorganization issues sometime during the term of my contract. This comes up a little bit earlier than what I anticipated. And on that point, you know, I'm about 15 months into a 48-month contract. I think things are going very well. And I think that with the change in this particular position, we'd actually be able to pick up some more steam on other work that needs to be done as well. So I'm open to discussions on how this might affect my duties and my contract. If nothing else, I'd like to be able to start recruiting at a business and accounting manager position, developing a job spec, and then continuing your discussion with your board on all of the details at future meetings, depending on what direction we get out of this meeting. And that, I think, wraps up my presentation.
Great. Before we start the discussion, I first want to say is that when the union first came onto the district, I was, I guess, the victim to take the first run at it. And at first, I have to say is I just didn't see that bringing a union in was going to fix our problems. And then when you came on, you gracefully negotiated a very strong contract for the employees, and to see the focus turn around to the quality of in employers we are, I think has been nothing but successful. And I want to thank you very much for taking the time and putting so much thought and energy into coming up with a good contract that the employees can be proud of and the board can be proud of as well. So thank you very much.
I think we need to make sure to thank them. You know, Tony, Jason, Casey, Celia, doing great work. Right now, you know, the workload that Celia's got with the vacancies that we have and her stepping up has been pretty incredible.
And I think it was the staff that actually changed my mind as to, one, to see the need to have a union so they do get all the proper benefits, but two, is that during our transitions and stuff, the lead employees hung in there with us, and it's the least we can do. So thank you very much for hanging in there, and thank you very much for putting together a sound MOU. So on that note, I'll open it up for discussions. Any questions for our architect?
I'm in support of the MOU and the job descriptions. I don't think I'm ready to start opening up Pablo's contract tonight, but I do appreciate the direction that this district has been going the last, was it 15 months? It seems to have gone quickly. And that the work and job performance that you've been doing and the quality of work that we've been getting out of staff, that the ability of the board to function is greatly increased because of the better board packets, and on down the line. And the idea for me was, and I think we're seeing fruit, was to bring on best practices. And that was always one of the things that struggled that I realized in 2010 when I got here, was that best practices, if there ever had been gutted at that point. And we saw that with no maintenance program. We saw that with no audits. We saw that with management and staffing that had been just gutted. And there was an inability to function, frankly. And then, I think we can recognize Aaron was trying to do good work, Aaron Hughes. And then Tony stepped up and I think really, he's here and I'll say this out loud, it really, Tony stepped up and stepped up the game of the district in a very big way. And we moved from being reactionary to trying to do some strategic planning and to try to look forward. And we're not all the way there yet. I mean, I want to hear about the pro forma and how to fund the infrastructure projects that we're looking forward to doing. But if you look at specifically the increased revenues from kind of buttoning up our system specifically with meters so we don't look like we're losing as much water as we are. It's been very, very positive. And I appreciate that the employees will go from being at will to having a property and ownership interest in their jobs. And so I think that's a very positive thing. So as to items 1 and 2, I definitely do approve. I am been all ears and been considering this consolidation of the district accountant and the office manager position for a while. I've been thinking about this, and I see it as the direction that will go. Obviously, there's going to be just the discussion really seems to be centered on how to pay for it. If I get this. You know, it's really how to pay for it. Where does the money come from, and how do we balance these particular budgets? And so that's my comments for now. I'll wait and hear what everybody else says in the deliberations. But
Ben?
I also agree with items went into the MOU and the job descriptions. I am supportive of those. And I am definitely interested in discussing more about this new job position. I like the idea of it, but I definitely want to see the options for working with your contract and seeing how it'll work with our limited resources, but also wanting to attract quality employees. So.
I think you've stated exactly what I was thinking. We need to make sure that we have budget for all this to happen without anybody getting cut short on stuff. And also on our continued efforts to improve things, I feel like we have come a long ways with as far as employees in the district. There's been some real ugly times with some of the employees that we've had in the past, and now it seems to be everything's working together. Everybody's happy. They're making a good effort to work for the community itself, and I think that's the best we can do. And I'm very proud of Celia. I know she works her hiney off, and so does Tony. I see him out all the time doing stuff, and the rest of the crew. So I appreciate that. And I think this contract's good.
Good?
Yeah. I'm very happy with the way things are going. And I feel that the staff is also, I hope, that they seem to be happy with how it's going.
I support... I support the whole concept because I like the stepping of each position, because you have people who you see potential in, but you can't bring them in on a higher tier. But this gives you an opportunity to work with them, train them, mold them, and then have future leaders. So I really, really like that concept. I see what it's done in the field, and so as far as administratively, I just think that we're as strong as our foundation is, and administratively is definitely a huge component to administratively who we are as an organization. So by bringing those two key components together, those two key jobs, office manager and pulling out the district accountant, besides management of that position, and rolling it into one, definitely makes sense. And bringing them together, I haven't worked the dollars. I don't know what it will cost, but I'm sure we'll hear about that. But I like the concept a lot. You still have a coordinator. You still have somebody who has their hands on everything beyond. I mean, more, I guess, than the general manager does in a sense. So I like the whole idea of consolidating those two. So what do you want us to do? Vote on the first two or?
Public comment.
You know, people have to know that I intentionally make them remind me of public comment. I really do. So. On that note, well, I do. I have, from my background. Yes, Ms. Tacker?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. I, too, agree with the MOU. I wish it could be more. I know you guys can't really afford more for these people who've worked hard. But what it sounds like is that as long as you have the vacancy of office manager, Celia's very stretched. And I don't know how you have internal controls with just two people. I think you have some water yard guys coming in, maybe helping in the office on occasion. But really, you need more eyes on the numbers and the money. And so I guess my question is, what does Pavo want? I mean, he's saying it's prudent to open up his contract, but is he ready to work at some reduced capacity and only do general manager duties? I remember when he came to your district, he had to say he wasn't going to take a step down from the county. He was going to make a lateral move or move up, and he has. He makes more money now than he did when he worked at the county. And, you know, so is he willing to go there? And if so, he's going to need to keep his PERS. He's going to have to work somewhere to keep his retirement in check. And I just don't know, what does he really want? You know, is there something else out there that's entertaining him? Is he ready? Are you ready? Is Oceano ready to either let him go or let him step away from the accounting duties? And then when we do get there and we are negotiating a new contract, how it might affect the job duties, the compensation, the contract term, and or severance provisions. And if you'll recall, he had a 6-month severance, so $100,000 just to let him go. So I guess I just want to emphasize how broad this is and how it really can impact the district. But, you know, over the long term, it's going to save you money, but what's the pain up front? And you have to be realistic. And does he really want to be here? Because if he's feeling stretched, maybe he doesn't want to be here.
Hey, Joe.
Joe Shacker, Security Court, Oceano. I am impressed about the stability now of having a general manager and the board. And I have to do a lot of catch up, but even attending the meetings is quite enjoyable now because there's transparency.
Tell your friends.
And you can talk back. something that came to mind, a couple comments. And forgive me if I'm not politically correct or say the wrong words. When you look at comparables, I'd like to see who was compared against whom. I'd like to see whether it was at Santa Barbara, was it Ventura, who was it? I know when the county did comparables, we compared salaries in Santa Cruz, high dollars. So I'd like to see who you compared it against. Housing here, even though it's not easy, it's much lower than most other places in Grover, Oceano, and parts of Aurora Grande. So housing's lower. Food prices are somewhat lower, even though they keep going up. The only thing we've got higher here that I know of is the gasoline, but that's high in California in general. So I think cost of living here should be taken into effect when you start looking at comparables from the whoever prepared it, from the union or whoever's doing that. How to pay for it, whatever your decision is. There was a mention that the fiscal impact is 3%. Are you taking into consideration the additional legacy retirements that are going to be coming up for future generations because of these increases? Are you computing the exponential cost of legacy? That's what brought us into the Great Recession, in main part. And there was banks and other things involved, but counties, local jurisdictions were faced with legacy retirement that they couldn't pay for anymore, or their whole budget was sucked up by the legacy retirement. You've got to take that in consideration. I'm all in favor of everybody making as much as they can. But I just retired from the county, and I fought tooth and nail. We sat around. We all went 7 years without a pay raise. I was virtually the only person that was against pay raises. I said, look at the people that aren't in public jobs. Look at people that don't have jobs. We have good-paying jobs with benefits. We can't be fired. I'm a taxpayer, I told people. I made a lot of kind of enemies. But anyway, you've got to look at that. You are ratepayers also. Keep that in mind. Nothing against employees trying to get as much as they can. I was really surprised that we're all in a union here. I'm not a union person, as you might expect. One quick thing here. I like all best practices, important career progression, positive. As far as your general manager pay, let's put him under a comparable with other districts. If he doesn't do the accounting anymore, cut his salary, compare it to other districts. Why not? Far fewer people in this district. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Keep in mind, though, you just said you like coming to our meetings now, so.
Absolutely.
I'm learning. I have to learn how to talk.
Bring a friend.
When you figure it out, let me know. Okay. So.
No, you were fine. You were great. Thank you. Bring a friend next time. I join Mary with that.
Okay. So, would you like us to split this into two motions?
Sure. Did you want me to respond? Did you want me to respond to any of the public comment?
Sure. Respond.
Okay. So the comparables were on local agencies, Northern Santa Barbara County and San Luis Obispo County. In some of the management salaries that were included in the attachments on, like, assistant controller and controller, I provided, those came out of a private study, which was basically a nationwide study. But that study then provides criteria for modifying those numbers depending on if you live in, like, metropolitan areas, like San Francisco. And so I used the numbers that basically would compare to our local area as not, you know, not Los Angeles, not San Francisco, not the urban areas. So both comparables were really based on, you know, local wages and not the wages we see in either Southern or Northern California in the larger metropolitan areas. I was a little bit surprised to see somebody, but I appreciate it, asking what does Pablo want, because a lot of times that question doesn't actually come up, nor should it really, because the more important thing is what's best for the district. And so I think that if your board does want to entertain the idea of business and accounting manager position, that certainly I'd come back to your board with various options. With respect to, you know, the question about if I'm not doing the accounting duties any longer, but that's a presumption that I wouldn't be doing accounting duties any longer. And I think that under all situations, no matter who we bring in, I am still going to have a significant role in making sure that the district's accounting and the functions and the processes that are set up, I'm going to have, you know, a very detailed hand in that. The most recent transition that we're doing right now, in fact, Celia and I are very much using this as an opportunity to really nail down some of the very detailed procedures that we're going through, and that's part of the work that's going to continue. So on the one hand, I think that there's a good opportunity to bring in a business and accounting manager position, and that will relieve me of some of the workload and some of the workload that Celia is doing right now. But the important point to stress here is that it is not by any measurable means going to result, you know, I do not get a walk away from accounting and financial responsibilities here. We still have transition work. We still have a lot of work that we need to do in order to make sure that the district is really nailed down in the future. But to conclude that point, I do like working with this district. You know, I think the question was, do I even want to be around here anymore? I wouldn't have come to Oceano if I didn't think that there was some work that was interesting for me to work on, if I didn't think that I could add some value. And I think over the last 15 months, that's proven that it is interesting. It is adding value, great people to work with. The water resource issues, obviously, in the South County are going to do nothing but, you know, continue. They're complicated. And certainly that's something that I'm bringing to the table that other general managers would be hard-pressed to do. So, like many general manager positions, you have to base it also on qualifications and what the needs of the district are. So I am open, but we have to be reasonable in terms of what we're looking at. I think that on that particular point, the real question for your board is, do you want me to come back with job descriptions for a business and accounting manager in order to look at those options in greater detail? Do you want to have an ad hoc committee of two board members to work with me on that prior to coming back? And if you're inclined to want to go into that direction, would you want me to start doing advertisements on it? Obviously not filling a position, but at least starting to advertise. But again, you have a couple of different options. The easiest one is simply to come back at a subsequent meeting with job descriptions and options and look at that in greater detail. Putting it in front of your board as a basic discussion item is to find out first whether or not you want to entertain the idea. And if you do, then I'd be more than glad to work on details with or without an ad hoc committee.
Right. I just want to add one more thing that you had touched on very lightly, and I took this into consideration when we were considering bringing you on board, right, when we had discussed the chances of bringing you on board, that one is that we were going into the water wars, and it really is the water wars, and I've said that for almost 2 years now that we were heading into water wars, and two, we are the smallest district among people who have line items that can handle legal, that can fight through courts, who have years and years. It will crush this community within a year if we didn't have our brain bank overseeing our biggest asset, which is our water in this county. And so that, I think, has been, that was one of the driving forces on not or just organizationally making the organization stronger, but how are we going to move into the future when we're in a 3-4 year, possibly a 10-year drought, and how are we going to diversify what we already have in place without having it legally being taken away from us? And that's always a risk, and Oceana would not have overplanned had it not been a historical risk of losing our investments in water. So I think that you contribute tremendous amounts to the South County. You wrote the LLRP, basically. Mm-hmm. Pretty darn close.
The adaptive management component, and kind of took a really good draft and got it into final draft form.
Okay,
there was a lot of work done on that before I arrived.
So that's fine. But the point being is that Oceana was allowed, among the other Lopez water purveyors, to store our excess water in Lopez right now, and that's something that none of us could have gotten through the system in a time that made a difference. So there is several of those contributions. I know the Northern Cities Management has really tapped into you for leadership along with the other cities around us. So as we go through this, you know, we have to keep those contributions in mind and know that Oceano is contributing to the South County, not just our little 1.9 miles. So I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the attached memorandum of understanding with the Service Employees International Union Local 620. That was attached to the staff packet. I'll also add to that we approve the attached job descriptions for the utility system supervisor, utility system operators 1, 2, 3, and the account administrators 1, 2, 3.
Second.
You can second.
And did you say the accounts and office manager you did not?
Nope, not yet.
We're going to do them separate.
I think that's a different direction to staff.
All right.
That's why.
That's fine. I heard a second, so. No.
Ms. Right, Angelo.
I'm waiting for them to
So let's do a roll call on that one. So it's the MOU, the job descriptions.
Yeah.
It's the MOU and the job descriptions, yeah.
Okay.
In short.
Those two. All right.
Director Guerrero?
Yes.
Director Angelo?
Yes.
Director Blackburn?
Yes.
Vice President White?
Yes.
President Lucy?
Yes.
And so my thinking on item three was not to have a motion, but just to ask staff to bring back this idea with further recommendations and
options,
maybe more nuts and bolts on what to consider. Because, like I said, I'm not ready to thank you and congratulate you for your hard work and cut your salary tonight. So
that's fair enough.
Yeah, and I don't think we need an ad hoc committee. Let's see
I don't
what
think
you're
so
thinking
either.
Right. And I support all that. What I'm concerned about is too much time in to bring somebody. Say the board agrees to merge these two positions, right? How long is that going to take us? Is it going to take us another 6 months? Is it going to take us another 4 months? I'd like to see
weeks.
You actually start putting a job description together since we know which direction you're moving in. And that way we could bring the job description back to the board. We can either thumbs it up, thumbs it down, but we can still be moving forward.
I will not be able to come back at your October 28th meeting. That won't be enough time because the agenda for that is due in basically, 9 days. But I will be able to bring it back for your meeting in November. Job descriptions as well as options. Assuming that action is taken in November, we would really be doing the recruitment process through the end of the calendar year, placing a position sometimes after January 1st, and it simply is going to depend on, the candidates and whether we've had a good recruitment process. I think that's a realistic timing. The good news is on Monday we have a new employee, one of the account administrators who's starting.
Great.
I'm going to hold off on names at this point in time because it's always good to celebrate when they walk in the door. I will say that the individual, though, was our number one candidate, and so it was good that we were able to come to an agreement on terms with that with the individual and definitely look forward to Monday. So that's going to help, most immediately with, getting some of the job done now that we've had two vacancies. But again, if I'm back in November and if it meets the pleasure of your board, then we would start recruitment right after that, and I would best anticipate filling a position, January, February timeline.
Okay, so can we have it on the first meeting in November?
Yes, likely only one meeting in November because the second, the fourth Thursday, I think smack dab on Thanksgiving.
Right.
And I think it's likely again also that we'll just have one meeting in December. Unless, if there's a need for a special meeting, then of course we'll schedule a special meeting. So lacking a motion, I certainly understand the feedback from the board and can, act accordingly.
Thank you, Pablo.
Yep.
And not to change the subject, but that thunder sounds so good. I just wish there was some rain. Have you been hearing it, all this pounding?
It was raining pretty hard earlier today in Santa Maria, and it was, or Santa Barbara, excuse me.
It feels like it's raining in here right now. It is
it's
probably
pretty buggy.
One of the most humid meetings I've ever attended in the West Coast.
Yes, it is. And on that note, let's roll it right along.
Closed
here.
Session.
Okay, I would ask that we do... public comment on the business item?
No, we took public comment on...
We already did that, sorry. Okay, so public comment on closed session after Mr. Minery announces it, or...
Do we want to do the future stuff ahead of that?
Yeah. Future agenda items.
I think we're pretty well set for the next meeting.
Next meeting is the protest hearing on garbage, and then the following meeting I'll come back with, with the issue
Fine.
We just talked about.
Okay, so we're good on number 11, and then go back up to 9.
Do you want to take close public comment on?
Public comment on closed session items.
Good evening again, Julie Tacker, and you have one case of whether or not to initiate litigation. And, of course, I have no way of knowing what that's about. But it leads me to wonder, a few months ago, weeks ago, you had a succession of items in close, an item in closed session that was a claim against the district, and there was never an action reported out on that, and I would hope that that's been resolved and it's not this. So.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. On that note.
Okay. We'll adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9D4, conference legal counsel to determine whether to initiate litigation. Item B, pursuant to Government Code 54956.9A, conference with legal counsel regarding the Santa Maria Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria. Item 9C, pursuant to Government Code 54957.6, conference with labor negotiators. Agency representative is the general manager. Employee organization is SEIU 620.